Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to give this talk. So I will be talking about going down the rabbit holes, hole with theories of process. And it's based on a recent paper with Brian Willard, and it's related to work done by many people sitting in this audience. So the basic physics question, which I won't answer, but I want to keep in the back of our minds, which I will address in some technical way in this talk, is the following. What is the, for the origin, of 3D mirror symbols? So mirror symmetries are special types of symmetries, dualities in three dimensions, that, for example, exchange Coulomb branches and Higgs branches. And a priori, it seems that it is unlikely that there is something analogous to that in four dimensions. The Coulomb branches in three dimensions are much more complicated in four dimensions than in four dimensions. The Coulomb branches in three dimensions can be charged under some global symmetries, and it is very hard to see how anything like that can happen in four dimensions. On the other hand, it's not completely crazy that properties of three-dimensional theories, which look very three-dimensional, have some higher dimensional origin. For instance, if a theory in three dimensions can be obtained by dimensional reduction from four dimensions, and in three dimensions it has a mirror dual, a different way to describe it. As a mirror dual, there might be some information about the fact that a mirror dual in three dimensions exists. This information can be encoded in some way in four dimensions. Okay, and in this workshop, I think there was a talk by Jaimo Park, who described a different class of 3D phenomena which look very three-dimensional, which have a 4D origin. For instance, you can have dualities in three dimensions between theories which have complicated superpotentials involving monopole operators and Chern-Simons terms, but all these dualities can be obtained by dimensionally reducing Seiberg dualities from four dimensions. Just taking usual Seiberg dualities, carefully dimensionally reducing them to three dimensions, and playing three-dimensional games, you can see things which look a priori very three-dimensional. Okay, so in this talk, I will try to address this question, but in a very technical aspect of that question. We will start from a class of theories in four dimensions. So the plan of this talk will be to start with the four-dimensional n equal 2 field theories. And I will tell you certain properties of these four-dimensional theories, which look very beautiful and very mysterious. And the origin of this, there are many ways to think about the origin of these interesting properties. And what I will want to tell you today is that this, at least one way to think about these properties, is by dimensionally reducing these theories to three dimensions. And then in three dimensions, these mathematical nice properties will be related directly to the fact that the dimensional reductions of these theories have mirror duals. And then we will go to three dimensions and talk a bit about 3D n equals 4 field theories and mirror symmetry, and explain some of the properties in four dimensions that we will encounter. And finally, I will have a very brief comment about what these three-dimensional properties, what these mirror symmetries in three dimensions might teach us about four dimensions. So when we go from four dimensions to three dimensions, we lose a certain amount of information about the four-dimensional theory. So in a sense, we get in certain limit of these four-dimensional theories, in this dimensional reduction, certain properties of four-dimensional theories become properties of mirror symmetry. But there is something which we might learn about the four-dimensional theory itself, in a sense, a bigger theory in four dimensions, by the fact that there is certain structure of mirror symmetry in three dimensions. So I I will very briefly mention at least a mathematical idea, a mathematical property which might be lifted from three dimensions to four dimensions. Okay. So this is the outline of the talk. And the main, I mention all the time some mathematical properties, and these mathematical properties will be related, will be properties of supersymmetric partition functions of these theories, n equal 2 theories in 4 dimensions, and n equals 4 theories in 3 dimensions. Okay, so let me start with the first part of the talk. Let me call it on the river bank. And the river bank is for the theories of classes. Okay. So let us discuss very briefly what are these theories of class S. So theories of class S are obtained by taking a 6D theory, 6D 2,0 theory, and compactifying it on a Riemann surface. It's denoted by it by CGS. You take some Riemann surface, it has some genus, and it has certain punctures. It is a punctured Riemann surface. It has S punctures. And the general story is very complicated. You can have many types of punctures, but for the sake of simplicity and for this talk, it will be enough only to concentrate on the on what is called maximal puncture. So for maximal punctures, there is some symmetry associated to the punctures. And what you obtain in 4D are n equals 2 SCFTs. N equals 2 superconformal field theories with in this case, SU n to the number of punctures flavor symmetry. And this flavor symmetry can be enhanced. Okay, so these theories are not very mysterious. They can be, in addition to these flavor symmetries, I mean, this n comes from, is parameterized by what kind of 6D theory you take. You take n minus 1 theory, you take n and 5 brains and put them on this Riemann surface. So in the simplest case, most of the talk, we will be in the A1 case, and the simplest theories you can have in 4 dimensions, which follow from this construction, are as follows. For instance, you can have a free theory, a theory which corresponds to a three-punctured sphere of A1 type is just a free hypermultiplet. Okay. In this geometric thing, way of thinking about the 4D theories, the complex moduli of these Riemann surfaces translate into couplings of three of the four-dimensional theories, and a sphere with three punctures doesn't have any moduli. This theory doesn't have any couplings, and in this particular case, this is just a free theory. Okay, the next theory we can consider is a theory is taking these three punctured spheres and gluing them together. And gluing the Riemann surfaces corresponds in four dimensions to gauging certain global symmetry. Okay, now this theory has a modulus, it has a complex modulus, and this complex modulus is a gauge coupling. And this theory is nothing more than an F equals 4 SU2 super Young-Mills in four dimensions. So it has an SU2 to the 4 flavor symmetry, which enhances here actually to SO8 flavor symmetry. And the final simple example I want to mention is that the torus, simple torus, is just an n equals 4 super Young-Mills. Okay. Now, for if you take not A1 theories, but AN theories with n, AN minus 1 theories with n bigger than 2, then most of these theories in this class S theories, which can be obtained by dimensionally reducing 6D theories down to 4D, don't have known Lagrangians. They are very complicated theories. For instance, there are theories corresponding to three-punctured spheres, which are not free theories. They are theories without any couplings, but which are not free.
But this number 1 and number 3, right, looks kind of similar, right? Because you have
Number one and number three.
Yeah, because
this and this.
Yeah, right. Because in equal four, you have to have this joint hypermultiplet if you in terms of n equal two, right? So it's not the same.
No, this is a free theory.
Free theory.
It's just a collection of free hypermultiplets. No gauge coupling. It's just a free theory. This is an interacting theory with the gauge coupling. And again, the modulus of the torus corresponds to a coupling of the theory. Okay, so the physical probes or mathematical probes, which we will use to say something about this theory, such as supersymmetric partition functions. So the partition functions which we will consider will be just partition functions on probably the simplest partition functions on a manifold which is S3 mod ZR times S1, which is sometimes called the Lenz index. In the case where R is 1, it's just the superconformal index. And I have to stress that all these theories are conformal, are superconformal n equal 2 theories in 4 dimensions. So when R equals 1, the partition function on this manifold is just the superconformal index. When R is not equal to 1, this is some more complicated index. It's still an index. You have this S1. If for R greater than 1, there are two non-contractible cycles in this geometry. This ZR acts in the following way. You can parameterize the S3 by two complex coordinates, Z1 and Z2. Z1 squared plus Z2 squared equals 1. And this orbifold identification means that we identify the points in the geometry in the following way. So these are the partition functions which we want to compute. And the amazing fact about the partition functions of these types for theories of class S, let me write it here, that the partition functions for all theories of class S have a very generic form, a very nice mathematical form. So if we have a theory which corresponds to, say, a Riemann surface with genus G and S punctures, and say it comes from AN minus 1 theory, you can always write it in the following form as some kind of a sum. And we will discuss a bit more what is this sum over. There are some structure constants. The genus appears in the power of the structure constants. And then for each puncture on the Riemann surface, you associate a certain special function, AI. Okay. So for any theory of class S, when you compute these types of partition functions, you can always express them in terms of the same special functions, which we will momentarily discuss. There is a way to write the partition function in a very geometric form. It only knows about the genus of the surface and the number of punctures.
Okay. But what it depends on, just coupling
constant? No, it doesn't depend on coupling constant. These partition functions are topological in a sense. When you think about them as corresponding to this Riemann surface, they don't depend on the complex moduli of the Riemann surface. In the four-dimensional language, they don't depend on the couplings of the four-dimensional
surface. So it's like index, right?
It is an index. An index. Okay, so exactly what it depends on, let me write an index definition of this partition function. So this partition function is an index when you quantize the theory on this space with minus 1 to the f, and then you can turn on certain fugacities. Let me write now. J2 minus r hat, Q, J2 minus J1 minus r hat, T to the r hat plus r, and the product over the flavor syntax, AI, FI. So these are some, this is a complicated functions of many parameters. You can turn on fugacities for symmetries that you have in the problem. So these are fugacities for the global symmetries, for the flavor symmetries. These J1 and J2 are SU2 times SU2 J1 is SO4. Lorentz symmetry of the problem. This is the U1R part of the R symmetry. The charge under the U1R, and this is the Cartan under the SU2R symmetry that you have in the problem. Okay, so you compute this this type of partition function, and you obtain that you always can express your results in this form. So this is the nice mathematical property of these theories, which we'll now try to interpret. Okay, some things I want, again, I want to stress that these theories of class S are very different. Some of them are free, okay? Some of them are interacting gauge theories. Some of them are interacting as CFTs which don't have Lagrangians. And most of them are some combination of the, those. There are gauge theories with, which you can think of as gauge theories coupling some strongly coupled CFTs to some free matter and so on. But always, always, for all these theories, you can write these indices in this simple form. Now, there is a way, an indirect way, to obtain this result, which I won't discuss in detail. In a couple of minutes, I will mention how one obtains them. So there is an indirect way to obtain this result. However, this result looks very different from direct computations. Okay. Now, in this case, you know what the theory is. It's just a free hypermultiplet, a collection of free hypermultiplets. You can just compute these partition functions directly, just by counting operators, doing localization, whatever your favorite method is. And in this particular case, the result looks as following. This is some double infinite product. Over you have these fugacities, t to the minus half. And then you have a plus minus 1, b plus minus 1, c plus minus 1, 1 minus p to the I, q to the j, t to the half.
But can then it would be, can I see them if this is parameters associated with these free particles of the theory, right?
You count operators, protected operators in this theory with certain weights.
Right, but protected operator.
These are conformal.
This is very one-to-one correspondence with just particle states, right?
Yes. You count, either you can think of counting states or counting operators in this theory. So you can compute these indices, and they have this form. So there is a product of all the choices of plus and minuses here. So in this particular case, so you have three factors of SU2 global symmetry, and you have correspondingly fugacities for them. And you compute this this partition function, and you get that it is given by this result. And it has a mathematical name called the Lipkin gamma function. So this this result is a direct computation, but it looks very different from this kind of formula. Here you have to plug, in this case, that the genus is zero and the number of punctures is three. And the claim is that you sum over a certain set of special functions, and you exactly reproduce that result. Okay, you can compute the index of the vector multiplet. It is again given as some a combination of elliptic gamma functions, and you can compute using these two quantities the index of any gauge theory. Schematically, it is given by some contour integral over the contribution of the vector multiplets. There is a Haar measure, and there are contributions of the two hypermultiplets. Okay, you can think of it just this theory is built from hypermultiplet and vector multiplet, and to compute the protected spectrum, you take contributions from all of them and project on gauge invariant states. Okay, this is I give examples when r equals one, yes, and where it is a superconformal index.
I'm just trying to understand that, but in terms of states, it kind of look like. Similar to this old index of BPS states, right? Because all of those states are BPS states.
That's right.
I'm trying to compare with this old index.
It's Witten's index, but when you choose when you compute this index in radial quantization.
Yeah.
So the conjugate, it's not usual QQ dagger. The Q dagger is a super conformal charge. So in that sense, it's just a Witten index in this form. Okay. So this is how you compute these indices, and again, the claim is you compute this index for this theory, and it is given just, again, by this formula. Just instead of setting s equals to 3, you set s equals to 4, and you obtain an expression which is exactly equal to this one, although it looks very different. Okay? And for theories which do not have Lagrangians, you cannot write these expressions. These expressions follow from some microscopic definition of the theory in terms of fields. For theories which don't have known Lagrangians, you cannot, you don't have this kind of description, and you don't know how to write these types of indices. However, these theories might be connected to theories which do have Lagrangians by some dualities, and you can check that these types of expressions always work. You take a non-Lagrangian theory, a theory which doesn't have Lagrangian, couple it to some hypermultiplet, go to a different duality frame, and you always can, where you can compute things using localization, and you always obtain these kind of expressions. Okay, so let me now tell you what a bit more about what are the objects in this formula. So the main player in the game in this formula are these functions psi of lambda. So let me tell you how they are defined, at least mathematically, and then a bit details how one can obtain this type of formula. So these functions, using this formula and the fact that you can glue things together by gauging symmetries, these functions are actually orthogonal functions under some measure. So these functions satisfy the following property. If you take the Haar measure of Z, you take the index of the vector multiplet and you multiply these functions, psi of ni of Z, it is equal to delta lambda mu times C lambda square, where C lambda is the structure constant there. It's some function only of P, Q, and T. Okay, so these are some orthogonal functions. And again, this property directly follows from consistency of this expression for any G and S, and the fact that when you glue things together, you just gauge a certain symmetry. Okay, so these functions are some orthogonal functions. And moreover, they are eigenfunctions of certain difference operators, which I will now describe. There is a class of difference operators, which we'll denote by sigma of R and alpha, for which these functions are eigenfunctions. Okay, so they satisfy the following equation, alpha lambda psi lambda of z. Okay.
And what is the meaning of this eigenvalues? Okay.
Very good. So now what is the meaning of these eigenvalues will be a question and which we'll answer towards the end in 3D. But let me just explain what is the meaning of this difference operator first. So it has a physics meaning and it has a math, a more mathematical meaning. So a physical meaning, a way to obtain these difference operators, a way one can think of these difference operators is by introducing surface defects into the index computation. So the statement is that if you compute an index of some theory, say Tn, C of Gn, and S, and which depends on some fugacity Z, and you act on it with this difference operator, This quantity which you obtain from an index of some theory by acting on it with difference operator corresponds to an index, I called it Z before, so it corresponds to an index of the same theory, but in the presence of certain surface defect. Another way, which is a math way to think about these difference operators, is that you can study these partition functions are some functions of the fugacities, and there is an this function has a lot of poles, a lot of singularities, and you can ask whether you can find some generic types of poles and what are the residues of these poles. And then, again, these difference operators, again, pop out of the computations, and they correspond to computing residues of the...
But can you use these defects as kind of modification of your CV?
That's right. It's not the same thing.
Added something.
Yes, you added certain surface defect with some extra degrees of freedom and...
And so it's like a probe, right? No, I mean, it's like external probe of the CV.
It's you modify your theory. This surface defect actually okay, maybe I have to say it at this point. So this surface defect, so we the geometry that we have is S3 or S3 mod ZR times S1, and this surface defect wrap the S1 and wrap one of the equators of S2. Okay, so they sit there at all times. There are some defects which modify the theory. Sorry. Okay. This is R, and this comes from the ZR, and alpha I will not yet. So alpha is there are different types of defects you can introduce, and alpha labels those defects basically. And in this language of computing residues of the of these partition functions, this alpha labels the position of the residues. There are some special values of fugacities that if you take the fugacity for a flavor symmetry to Z of alpha, or let's say just to alpha, Z of T of N, C, G of S.
But it means that it's indeed a kind of singularity at this point, right?
There is a simple pole at that point. Okay, so then the statement is that you obtain exactly the same difference operators. Alpha of Z acting, okay, maybe I should give more details. So let's say if you have a theory with S plus one punctures, so it has, it depends on a collection of S plus one fugacities for the flavor symmetries, and you compute a residue in respect to, with respect to the pole of one of the fugacities, then this is given by this difference operator acting say on one of the fugacities of a theory which has one less puncture, Z1, Zs. So there is this kind of equation relates indices of two different theories. One theory with S plus one punctures, you take a theory with S plus one punctures, you compute a certain pole, a certain residue. And this residue is given by a certain difference operator acting on another on the partition function of another theory, which has one less puncture. Okay, and there is a way to relate these two ways of thinking. Let me just say it in words. So the way to relate these two, the physical way of surface defects and the mathematical way of computing residues, is the following statement, that if you have a pole in the partition function, in such a partition function, and you compute the residue is a partition function of a theory which you obtain by turning on a certain VEV in the theory. You turn on a certain VEV, the theory flows in the IR to a different theory, and what you compute by computing a residue is the index of the theory in the IR. Now, it so happens that for the special poles that you turn on, for which you are looking for the residues, they correspond to VEVs for operators which have derivatives. So when you give a VEV to an operator with a derivative, you have some space-time dependent VEV. And in the IR, you have a two-dimensional special surface in your theory. And there is some there are some degrees of freedom living on that surface. And that's how...
In this sense, right?
Sorry?
In this sense, on the boundary, right?
It's not a boundary. It's some special...
It's a total integral of total derivative. Because you said that the paper is derivative, right? So in this way, if you, it's kind of...
You turn on a VEV for a derivative of an operator, and then say when this VEV is zero, the locus where this operator is zero is a special, this VEV is zero in space-time, is a special surface in some sense. And in this case, it will be a two-dimensional surface. Okay. So that's how these two physics and mathematical ways of thinking about these difference operators are related. So if there is a difference operator introducing a surface defect, it might be related to analytical properties of the index. Okay. And these observations are actually the ones which allow you to fix this way of writing the index. You can think, for instance, about analytical properties of the index. When you have poles, you derive certain generic class of poles. You understand that they are always given by some by acting with some difference operators on indices or partition functions of other theories. And these difference operators are computable exactly. You exactly know what they are, even if you don't know what the theories are. The class of poles which you can study are generic poles. In some sense, there is a class of poles in all of these partition functions for all these theories. They exist for any theory. They don't depend on a specific theory you are discussing. And then by assuming dualities and some consistency conditions, you can arrive that the partition functions should be expressible in terms of eigenfunctions of these difference operators in that form.
Can you prove that these operators are self-adjoint with respect to that?
Sure. Problem? You know what they exactly are. I can write them exactly. For instance, if you have r equals 1 and the simplest operator, let's call it alpha 1, which actually is equal to t to the half q to the half, say, of z is equal to, it's proportional to something which looks like t over q, z plus z minus 2 p, theta of z squared p. Say you act on some function f of z, f of q to the half z plus theta of t over q z squared p, theta of z minus 2 p, f of q to the minus half z. Okay? So you can write these operators explicitly. You know what the measure is. You know what the vector multiplet measure is. You can check that they are self-adjoint. There are actually many of these operators, and you can show that they are commuting, and it makes sense to talk about their joint sets of eigenfunctions. So these functions are well defined.
And then it's automatic that everything you can expand in terms of the basis of.
That's right.
But then. This epsilon, it looks like a quasi-momenta, right? Because it's operator of the shift, right?
What? Which epsilon?
This one. Because when you are adding...
Okay, let's wait for with this epsilon. I don't have a good way to describe epsilon in four dimensions, to give a physical meaning of this epsilon.
Comparison is like a periodic potential. You have a function, you have it acting by shift, right? And
right.
You're getting the same function up to the phase, right?
Right.
But this phase is defined by quasi-momenta. And it looks like this epsilon has this meaning.
I don't know. Do you see when you act with the partition functions are given as sums of these eigenfunctions? Okay.
Right.
So when you act with these difference operators on these partition functions, each term in this sum acquires different epsilon.
Right. But look, well, your function action on z and it shifts z to a different one, right?
That's
and it's
right.
Like a shift of. Going to different coordinates, it looks like.
Well, these difference operators are known to mathematicians. They describe certain quantum mechanical systems, and there, I think, what you are saying is,
Is periods you're decomposing your partition function into plane waves, and these things are the moment of these plane waves. It's periods. I'm not saying it's precise.
Well, it is that, but I don't know what the 4D physical meaning of that is. That's what I'm trying to say. If you can think of these difference operators as some, this is just some deformation of Calogero-Moser model.
Uh-huh.
And so you can think of that in that way, but this is a one-dimensional quantum mechanical way of thinking. I don't know what the four-dimensional meaning is.
But it still looks similar in this
sure.
Kind of periodic sense. I mean, this effective
what
periodic.
You change the type of 6D?
Yeah, this generalizes, but you will get different. You will have different. The logic is the same. the details will change. The different operators will look differently. Okay. So let me just write here certain properties of this psi's to keep in mind. One of them is the equation I wrote there, the equation of these functions being eigenfunctions. So one way, I just rewrite that equation. So you have this equation that this is an eigenfunction. And then from the mathematical property that you're actually computing the residues, there is another way in which this epsilon appears. And this way is just take the residues of these partition functions. And the fact that the residues are given by the same difference operator, you learn that when you act with a difference operator, you learn that when you compute the residue of these eigenfunctions, when z goes to alpha of psi lambda of z, you get epsilon r alpha. Okay, so there are two ways in which these epsilons appear. There are eigenfunctions and they are residues of the eigenfunction. They are eigenvalues of difference operators and they are residues of the eigenfunctions.
The function f that you wrote down there, is it there?
The function f? This is some generic function. So it should be, in this context, it should be the partition function. Okay, so finally, before going to 3D, let me say something about what these eigenfunctions actually are. So if you keep all the fugacities generic, all this PQT that we have here generic, then it's very hard to find a complete set of eigenfunctions of these different operators. These are some elliptic operators. And as far as I know, no complete set of functions is explicitly known for these different operators. However, if you take certain limits, for instance, if you take p equals 0 or q equals 0, these eigenfunctions are related to very well-studied objects, MacDonald polynomials. And when you take both p equals 0, p and q equals 0, these are what is called Hall-Littlewood polynomials, which appeared in Opadol's talk last week. And if you take q equals t or p equals t, these eigenfunctions are sure polynomials. Or to be more precise, they are very intimately related to these polynomials. So in these particular cases, you can explicitly compute these expressions and compare them to cases when you can actually perform the computation, when you have a localization.
Did sure polynomials come out here because you can calculate these partition functions in terms of Young diagrams? I mean, the Schur polynomials.
The Schur polynomials are characters of SUN, but I don't know if I can think about it in that way.
I'm just thinking that you can evaluate sometimes partition functions in terms three of Young diagrams, and that's where Schur
Maybe. But then you will have to find the generalization. A Schur polynomial here is just some special case. And, well, it's very special, but. Okay, it is special in one way, which I will now briefly mention. Okay, so before going to 3D and trying to give a more physical explanation of what these properties are, let me pose this question. So the main question we want to ask is what is this property? I mean, where it comes from? We can get it from some indirect computations, but there is not much physics involved. There are some words that you can say surface defects, you compute certain residues, and you get these expressions. And you mathematically get certain eigenfunctions and certain energies appear. And it's not clear what their physical meaning is. And what we will try to show now that in three dimensions, if you dimensionally reduce these theories to three dimensions, all these properties have very natural meaning in three dimensions. They are related to mirror symmetry. They can be interpreted as following from some mirror symmetry properties.
But Before you go on, one last question. Can you understand this commuting operators as Hamiltonians?
Yes, they are Hamiltonians of Ruizena-Schneider integrable models, which are generalization of Kolodgyr-Moser models. But this fact is not inputted into this story. You just compute the residues of certain poles, and you know these difference operators just pop out of the computation, and they turn out to be this difference, these Hamiltonians. So we want to find the ultimate goal is to understand what is the physics of this expression in 4D. In this talk, I will give an explanation of what it is in 3D. There are other ways you can find explanations of this formula. For instance, you can look for a 2D explanation of this formula. These theories are obtained from 2,0 theory put on a Riemann surface. And you can understand this expression as coming from a dual computation on the Riemann surface in the AGT sense. So these indices are topological quantities in terms of this Riemann surface. They don't correspond to they don't depend on the modulus of the Riemann surface. So there is some topological quantum field theory which lives on that Riemann surface, which gives you exactly this this way of writing the index. So one particular case, in one way in which this Schur index is special, is that you actually know what the 2D theory is. The theory is some deformation of 2D Young Mills. It's called the Q Young Mills. So this Q becomes a parameter, some deformation parameter of the two-dimensional gauge theory. You can actually compute in that two-dimensional gauge theory some correlators which you believe are correspond to the index, and you get exactly this expression. Okay. But the point is that in general, this two-dimensional topological quantum field theory is not known. You cannot write a Lagrangian for the theory. You can abstractly define it in terms of structure constants and so on, but you don't have a very intuitive physical definition of those theories. Things become different in 3D. So next part of the talk is we are going down the rabbit hole, the world where everything is clear. Okay. So to understand this expression, these expressions and properties, we simply dimensionally reduce theories of class S down to three dimensions. So we take these theories, compactify them on a circle, and go to three dimensions. Okay. So in three dimensions, we obtain n equals 4 theories. These n equals 2 theories are n equals 4 theories in three dimensions. They are not conformal. In four dimensions, we had conformal theories. In the three dimensions, these theories are not conformal. They flow to some fixed point. In some sense, these dimensional reductions are the dimensional reduction of these theories from 4D to 3D is the naive reduction. One has to be very careful with these types of reduction when, for instance, you have symmetries. So it's not usually it's not just that you take a certain Lagrangian in 4D, you write the same Lagrangian with one coordinate less in 3D. And that's the dimensional reduction. You have to be very careful, for instance, in cases where some of the symmetries in 4D are anomalous. When you do this dimensional reduction, you generate certain superpotentials in 3D. In this case, it's literally you take the Lagrangian, you dimensionally reduce it, you remove one coordinate, and you get a theory in 3D. So these dimensional reductions are simple.
But in respect to this partition function, you're talking about because it was the index, right? So I can view it in such a way that it was four-dimensional theory. Result doesn't depend on Hamiltonian, in a sense that the quantity, if I have time coordinate, right, that I can take time equals zero, and forget about time in this theory. And then I do have this kind of spatial theory, right, in 4D. And the object you are calculating there, partition function, it is this three-dimensional, special object, right? So in this sense, reduction of time coordinate is kind of trivial.
It's not the same thing. For instance, when you dimensionally reduce, there are one way to see that things have to be the same. It's not the spectrum of protected operators. Yeah. It's not the same in the 4D theory and in the 3D.
No, but the spectrum of protected operator in 3D theory it would be two-dimensional object essentially, right? And we are talking about the states. In 4D was three-dimensional states.
Right. For instance, one way to think there are non-local objects in 4D, these line operators around the S1, which become basically reduced to local things in three dimensions, and that those will be the things which will make the Coulomb branches of the 3D theories more complicated, and there will be the new local things in 3D. So if you count local operators, those will be the new. Extra things. Okay, and finally, interestingly, these theories, when you dimensionally reduce them to three dimensions, have mirror duals. Okay, this is something we did not have in four dimensions, but you do have in three dimensions. So, for instance, the simplest case, if you take A1 theory corresponding to a three-puncture sphere, which is just a free hypermultiplet. In three dimensions, this theory has a mirror description, which is just the following quiver theory. Okay. And in this mirror symmetry, the Higgs branch of this theory becomes the Coulomb branch of that theory, and there is no Coulomb branch here, no Higgs branch there. Okay. So you can obtain this kind of a theory by gluing together a very important three copies of very important theory, which is called TSU2. Okay. It's just a bifundamental. It's a doublet of. These are two hypermultiplet. You gauge some U1 symmetry, and they transform under an SU2 symmetry, which rotates the Higgs branch. And there is also a topological U1 symmetry, which actually is enhanced to SU2. So this theory has an SU2 symmetry acting on the Coulomb branch and an SU2 symmetry acting on the Higgs branch. And you just take three copies of these theories and engage this SU2, or rather SO3, not the SU2, and you obtain a mirror dual of this theory. And in general, the dual of a theory corresponding to genus G Riemann surface with S punctures is the star-shaped quiver of this form, where you have an SO3 gauging in the middle, and you have S legs with U1 gauging, and you have additional G adjoint hypermultiplets in the middle. Now, you see that even the structure of these quiver theories in three dimensions is very reminiscent of the structure of this formula. Okay. Now, we can compute, we are now in 3D, and we can compute 3D quantities for these theories using 3D probes, 3D supersymmetric partition functions, and the 3D supersymmetric partition functions can be directly obtained from partition functions in 4D. So you are in 4D, you have, say you computed this partition function on a 3 mod ZR times S1, where the radius of S1 is beta. You have several limits that you can take. You can take a limit by sending this radius of S1 to 0, and you obtain the partition function of the dimensionally reduced theory on S3 mod ZR. Okay. So you can obtain this quantity, which is not an index. It's some partition function which you can compute in 3D by sending R to infinity, this R which acts on the Hopf fiber of S3, by sending R to infinity, this what was the Hopf fiber disappears, and you are left with S2 times S1 beta. So you are left with an index in 3 dimensions. And this index in 3 dimensions is trace over S2 minus 1 to the F. Let's call this fugacity Q hat. Q hat to the power J2 plus half RH plus RC. And T hat RH minus RC. These T's and Q's are different different from what from Q and T we had before, but they are related to them in a simple way. And so this J2 is the same J2 we had before in the index. The RH is just R. The RH and RC are the Cartans of the SU2 times SU2R symmetry that you have in 3 dimensions. So RH is just the Cartan of SU2R you had in 4 dimensions, and RC is minus the U1R charge you had in 4D. Okay. So now you can see some interesting things about these partition functions just from this definition. For instance, if you have a mirror symmetry exchanges the Coulomb branches and the Higgs branches, and then the index of theory A will be equal not to the index of theory B. It will be equal to the index of theory B, where you take T to 1 over T, where you exchange RH and RC. An index, if you have a Seiberg-like duality in 3D, where the Higgs branches map to Higgs branches and Coulomb branches map to Coulomb branches, the indexes should be exactly the same.
But 1 over T is like a change in sign of RH and RC. Right?
You just exchange their roles. Okay. And another thing I want to say, which is generic about this, another two things, one I already mentioned, is that, again, these indices in 3D are different than indices in 4D, because some of the non-local objects in 4D become local in 3D. For instance, indices in 3D are given by sums over monopole operators. There are some monopole configurations in 3D which you have to consider, and these monopole operators come in this length space index computations by some configurations which wrap the non-contractible cycle of the three mod ZR.
But this kind of looks like simple, and because then you have vortex in 3D.
Sure.
And it is this monopole operator
but
the vortex.
Right. I don't know why it's simple or not simple. It's just fact of life.
It's a typically two-dimensional object, right? In 3D. What else?
Right. Okay. And finally, one thing I want to say about these indices is that given this index, you can take special limits of the fugacities, which are in somewhat analogous to limits which you had here. For instance, you can take a limit which we'll call Higgs limit, where you take Q to the half T fixed, and you take Q to the half Q to zero and T hat to infinity. And you can have another limit, which we'll call Coulomb limit, where you keep Q to the hat minus T hat to minus one fixed, and take both of them to zero. These limits are well defined because one can convince himself that from unitarity, basically, the combinations of charges, you know, coupling to these combinations of objects are non-negative. And so these limits are always well defined. And we call these limits Higgs and Coulomb because in this limit, basically, the contributions of vector multiplet trivialize. In this limit, the contributions of the matter trivializes. And interestingly, these objects are related directly to things which Nopadol was talking about, this Hilbert series of Higgs branch and Coulomb branch, which people are computing. They are just these limits of the indices in 3 dimensions. This is always true. Okay. So now let me go to actually computing these partition functions for the dimensionally reduced theories of class S.
Okay. You said that they are not index anymore, right?
No, this limit is an index. This limit is not an index. And for simplicity, everything which I will say from now on, I will say in this language, in the index language, but it can be said equally in that language. Okay. So to compute the index of, so what we want to do is to compute, say, this index for in the mirror frame. So we can compute the index here. It is just given by a very similar formula which we written before. It's a free theory. You can compute that index here. It is a gauge theory. The computation is more complicated. And to do this computation, we first can compute the indices of these TSU2 theories. So let me not write explicit expressions, which are a bit lengthy. But you can compute the index of TSU2. And let me write it in the following form. It's as psi hat, which depends on q hat and t hat. And it has two sets of fugacity. So we'll call them AM and BN. Okay? So A and B, we have two symmetries here, one acting on the Higgs branch, not to be confused with the R symmetries. These are other global symmetries which act on the Higgs branch. And there is a symmetry which acts on the Coulomb branch. And we can turn on a fugacity for that symmetry, for those symmetries, and background magnetic monopole GNO charges for those symmetries. Okay, so the general index of the theory of the TSU2 theory has this form. Okay, now one way to think about TSU2 theories is as theories living on a boundary. In four dimensions, between n equals four superior mills, say with SU2 gauge group, and the S dual with an SO3 gauge group, and the TSU2 lives on the boundary. Okay. And the S duality of the 4D theory translates into mirror symmetry of this theory. This theory has mirror symmetry by itself. It's different from mirror symmetry there. This theory has a Coulomb branch which looks very similar to its Higgs branch, and there is actually mirror symmetry which exchanges them. And this mirror symmetry has the 4D origin in this simple case. It just comes from S duality in four dimensions. This theory lives on the boundary. S duality of the 4D theory implies that the theory on the boundary has a certain symmetry, which is a mirror symmetry. So these guys have the following property. Of AM BN is equal exactly to psi hat of Q T minus 1. So it's a mirror symmetry, and you exchange the Higgs branch with the Coulomb branch. Okay. Okay. Another thing I want to say about this partition function of TSUM. So we can compute this partition function in one of these limits, say in the Higgs limit. And in the Higgs limit, interestingly, what happens is the following thing. If you take this partition function of TSU2 and take the Higgs limit, the dependence on M disappears from the index, and dependence on B disappears in the index. And what you get is exactly the eigenfunctions we had before, these psi lambdas, where this GNO charge is the level of the index, of the eigenfunction, and A is the 4D fugacity. Okay, so it's in this particular limit, in the Higgs limit, there is a direct relation between the eigenfunctions we get in 4D and the eigenfunctions we have in 3D. And the physical reason is that the Higgs branches in 4D and in 3D are basically the same. So if you have a limit of the index which only fills the Higgs branch, it should be directly related to the limit of the index which fills the Higgs branch in four dimensions. Okay. So now this you can glue the indices of TSU2 theories together to obtain the index of the mirror of the free theory. And you just obtain this expression. So you get three copies of the TSU2 theories. You get those eigenfunctions. And the sum here over lambda in the 3D language is the sum over magnetic monopoles, over the GNO charges of the monopoles of the SO3 theory sitting here in the middle. Okay, and you get exactly this formula in 3D. Okay, so in this particular case of the Higgs branch, the relation, the explanation of this formula in this in the limit where p and q are equal to zero is it literally comes from mirror symmetry in 3D. You have a mirror symmetric description in 3D, and you get this kind of a formula. More generically, when you compute the indices in the mirror frame, yes.
So how does one understand the independence of the index on M and B in this particular limit?
You want an intuitive explanation? Well, what? No, this
is exact in this limit.
Sorry.
Does that charge become exact, or, you know, is there a way to understand that way?
Well, one thing I can say that this is a symmetry which rotates the Coulomb branch, and Coulomb branch basically doesn't contribute to the index in this limit. So anything which, you know, the only things on the Coulomb branch are charged under this symmetry, so they don't contribute to the index.
What about M?
That I don't have a good intuitive explanation. Well, it actually depends on M, but in a simple way. It is delta M0. So only only zero GNO charges for that symmetry contribute. OK. So in more generality, if you don't take any limits, the index of this theory has a structural form of that formula, but not quite. It is a sum over the monopoles, say, sum of n, then there is some integral over the SO3 fugacity, then there is a contribution of the 3D vector multiplet, and then you have a product over these functions. I want the S psi q hat, t hat, ai, bi, sorry, ai, m, mi, and b, sorry, z, n. Okay, so this thing is what becomes, well, actually it's the other way around, the sum over lambda times c lambda to minus 2 in four dimensions becomes, roughly speaking, the contributions of the vector multiplets, and this sum and integral in three dimensions. And the eigenfunctions in four dimensions become indices, physical quantities. They become indices of the TSU2 theory. One interesting fact is that this level of the index, the lambda, becomes the parameter basically of the Coulomb branch of this theory. So it becomes on the same footing as the fugacity z.
Are the
GNO charges. Okay.
Do you have something like a background monopole charge?
Yeah, these are these.
Then it has an interpretation, because under mirror symmetry, the background monopole charge map to a baryonic charge. Then that would give the interpretation.
The background.
If you turn on background monopole charge in there.
Well, you see, it's a different thing. If you do a mirror symmetry of this theory,
okay,
you go not to the Higgs limit of the index, you go to the Coulomb limit of the other index, and that won't depend on the other set of parameters. It won't depend on A, and it won't depend on N. So you will still have to.
So what about M? Is still there? Or?
Well, one of them is there, but the other one. That's right, but you will have to explain there why it is still there. We can discuss that, but I didn't think about it. Okay, and finally, let me explain these formulas. So this kind of an equation has a 3D interpretation as a direct computation in the mirror frame. So we in three dimensions, we have two types of computations. We can just dimensionally reduce and make a computation, or go to a mirror frame and perform the computation. And this kind of expression you obtain directly by performing the computation in the mirror frame. Now, what about these equations? Okay. Now, this equation, we had an interpretation of it, this difference operator, as introducing surface defects into the problem. When you dimensionally reduce on S1, so these surface defects, we had an S1 and we had an S3 mod ZR. So this surface defect lived on S1 and on one of the equators of this guy. When we dimensionally reduce on S1, we get a line defect which sits on one of the equators of S3 mod ZR. If we send R to infinity, we get a line defect which lives on the S1 and on the poles of S2. Okay? So these difference operators, when you dimensionally reduce them, for instance, when you send R to infinity, they become difference operators introducing line defects in three dimensions. Okay? So you can write these things in three dimensions become other operators which you can compute, say T of Z, and they have the same levels. Which act on the indices, this psi q over qt. Say, let me write in shorthand notation z and y. Okay, and this you can dimensionally reduce these energies, and what they become in three dimensions are contributions of Wilson lines. Okay, so this eigenvalue equation becomes this thing, psi hat, q hat, t hat, z, y. And this depends only on y. Okay? Again, this is just the result of a computation. And this eigenvalue equation, so this is a difference operator which introduces one type of line defect for one of the symmetries, for the symmetry which acts on the Higgs branch, and it is equivalent to introducing a Wilson line operator for the other symmetry, for the symmetry which acts on the Coulomb branch. And in this picture, it's very easy to understand why is it so. Okay, so this TSU2 is the theory on the boundary, and you can take a Wilson loop here and collide it with the boundary. Or you can have a Hooft loop here and collide it with the boundary. And because of S-duality, these two things are equivalent. They map to each other under S-duality. And this eigenvalue equation in 4D becomes just this mirror symmetry duality equation in 3D. The fact that Hooft loops and Wilson loops are exchanged under the duality. Okay, so this is the physical meaning of the eigenvalue equation. And the physical meaning of this equation is as follows. You can take this general logic that the residues of indices correspond to turning on certain valves. In four dimensions, we didn't have a physical meaning to this object. But in three dimensions, this is an index of TSU2. This is an index of some theory. You can turn a valve to certain operator. In four dimensions, these valves gave us some special two-dimensional surfaces. Here, they will give us special one-dimensional surfaces. So what you are left in the IR is with some Wilson line. These eigenvalues become Wilson lines, and you get basically a theory which has only a Wilson line for one of the global symmetries. It's a non-dynamical object that you get in the IR. Okay, so in three dimensions, all these mysterious properties, which we can mathematically get in four dimensions, have a very clear-cut physical meaning. Okay, which makes us wonder. What is the physical meaning of these objects in four dimensions? Is there the fact that we have a physical explanation of these properties in three dimensions is that there is a mirror symmetry in three dimensions? These expressions in four dimensions contain this information about the 3D mirror symmetry, but they contain something bigger in four dimensions. So what would be the physical explanation in four dimensions of this thing?
Yeah. So this wave function psi in four dimensions has the property that it's invariant under t going to pq over t.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Okay, that's a very good question. That was our first guess that it would be mirror symmetry, but I don't think it's related. So this, what Abhijit mentions is that these eigenfunctions in four dimensions, they have the following property. PQ, well, roughly, PQ over T. And T goes to PQ over T in this T hat language is T hat goes to 1 over T hat. So it really screams that it is some kind of a property of mirror symmetry. But there are several things which I'm not sure whether this interpretation can be correct. One is that mirror symmetry would exchange, you know, A. What mirror symmetry does? In three dimensions, this corresponds to the Higgs branch, this corresponds to the Coulomb branch. So you should expect that these things are somehow exchanged, and they're not in this expression. This is one thing. So I don't know. This is an interesting another interesting property which has to have a physical explanation, but I don't know how it is related. Okay, and now finally, very briefly, let me mention another interesting mathematical fact about lifting these 3D relations, mirror symmetry relations, to 4D. Okay. So in 3D, we can write these eigenfunctions as indices or partition functions of 3D theories. These 3D theories, in general, have this form for, if we now generalize to SUN, these are theories which have this kind of form. They are these tails with n minus 1, sequences of gauge groups with bifundamental matter in the middle connecting these gauge groups. So the flavor symmetry is, again, an SUN acting on the Higgs branch times an SUN acting on the Coulomb branch. There are U1 symmetries here, topological U1s, which enhance to SUN. So this is the generic structure of the 3D theories which correspond to these eigenfunctions in 3D. And the question is whether there is something like that, at least this mathematical structure, you know, of these nested gauge groups in 4D when you compute this eigenfunction. So the amazing fact is that when you go to McDonald limit, where the eigenfunctions are known, it's the most general case where the eigenfunctions are known. When you keep all the fugacities generic, we simply don't know its explicit expressions for the eigenfunctions. But when these eigenfunctions are known, then there is a way to write eigenfunctions which appear in these expressions, which has this form. Let me just write the expression for the TSU2 case, and you write it in terms of what is called Q integrals, a plus minus 1 Q, a minus 1, and then you have a Pochhammer symbol QU, a plus minus 1 Q, TU, a plus minus 1 Q, U to the lambda, dQu, where the Q integral, f of u, dQu, is defined as in the following way, a1 minus q, sum over n equals 0 to infinity, f of aqn, q to the n. And it is divided so that the Q integral of say u to the k dqu is just given by u to the k plus 1 over the q deformed number k plus 1. Okay? So, and this expression has the form of the partition function of TSU2. This is looks like an FI term in three dimensions, and this looks like the contribution of the matter. And if you take q to 0, you get the whole Littlewood expression, which exactly becomes the partition function of TSU2. So this expression generalizes to TSU, and you can write similar expressions for MacDonald polynomials as integrals, as Q integrals, which have exactly this form. You have a sequence of integrals with increasing rank, and you have matter connecting this integral. So in some sense, there should be, if you want to go back to 4D and give a physical interpretation to these eigenfunctions in 4D or maybe still in 3D, there should be some deformation, some Q deformation of the 3D theory, which will give you this physical meaning of the eigenfunctions directly in 4D.
These are not indices in a sense.
No, I don't have a physical meaning for that. The only thing I'm saying, the structure of these eigenfunctions is the structure of the TSUM theories in 3D. Whether this you can interpret as something physical, I don't know.
But we also know that if you consider theories corresponding to Riemann surfaces with punctures, and if you put sufficiently many punctures, then you can actually get a weakly coupled Lagrangian description where this type of thing plays a role.
Which type? This type of thing? Yeah.
In 4D.
Well, oh, that's a different thing. You mean the superconformal tails?
Yeah.
I don't think this is the same thing. But we can discuss. This corresponds to punctures. Here I only discuss the simplest case of maximal punctures. Yeah. What you are saying, this will correspond to a non-maximal puncture with some weird flavor symmetry. In 3D, it will correspond to sequence of gauge groups which are not 1, 2, 3, but there is something.
Well, I think if a four-dimensional non-maximal puncture will give you some non-maximal theory in 3 dimensions. So I think it is related in that sense.
I'm not sure, but we can discuss. Okay, that's it.